they won't agree to raise the debt ceiling. Austin Goolsbee, who chairs the President's Council of Economic Advisers, says that would amount to a default on the government's obligations.
Which is totally unprecedented in American history. The impact on the economy would be catastrophic.
And Goolsbee appeared on ABC's This Week. They're scratching their heads in Beebe, Arkansas.
I thought it was out of an Albert Hitchcock movie.
Thousands of dead birds fell from the sky New Year's night. Mayor Mike Robertson says he got the call early Saturday morning.
When you first get the call, you think it's a New Year's joke, but it wasn't a joke.
It sounds unusual, but one bird expert says it's really not. She says lightning and high-altitude hail could be responsible. State wildlife officials have ordered tests on some of the birds. A high-ranking Iranian general says Iran has shot down two planes he describes as Western drones over the Persian Gulf. Other details, including when the shootdowns occurred, were not released. And so far, there's been no comment from U.S. officials. I'm Stan Case. Get our hourly update in the CNN iPad app. This is CNN Radio.
This is a message for all men dealing with frequent urination or waking at night to urinate. Right now, New Vitality is inviting you to take part in a nationwide giveaway of their best-selling supplement, Beta Prostate. You heard right. Every man who calls right now will learn how to try our best-selling supplement, Beta Prostate, for free. You only pay a small shipping and handling fee. For details, just call 1-800-790-6281. Supplies are very limited, so don't wait. Beta Prostate is made with a breakthrough ingredient shown to support a healthy urine flow and bladder emptying. It even reduces waking at night from the urge to urinate. Take part in this special opportunity and try Beta Prostate free. But hurry! This free offer will only be around for a limited time. And when this offer is gone, it's gone. Just call 1-800-790-6281. That's 1-800-790-6281. Call 1-800-790-6281.
I just snuck into my kids' rooms and took their temperatures while they're sleeping, thanks to my Exergen thermometer. All I did was swipe their foreheads for a few seconds, didn't even wake them up. My sister, the nurse, told us about the Exergen scanner, and it's the best. Real value for the money, and truly a lifesaver. Now I don't have to deal with ears or rears, if you know what I mean.
I'm done.
Abundance. I am your host, Dana Allred. Today, we'll talk about proficiency. It's number 736 from my list of 1,001 things I'm thankful for that I call 1,001 thanks. Anything happened on the way to Dana Allred? Three-car pileup. I drive the speed limit. I didn't always. I used to drive a Mazda RX-7. My mom sold it to me after she had driven a few years. I talked my wife into buying it. She was dubious until we pulled up and she remembered what the car looked like. As we pulled into my mom's driveway, my wife turned to me and said, "Can I have it?" Now, she drove this car until she had cancer. Again, she's fine now, but after chemotherapy, she decided the car kind of smelled like chemotherapy, so we bought her a new car. I loved driving that sports car. It could take corners at just about any speed, which isn't good for your driving point total. I don't know how many tickets I got, but eventually I had enough points to endanger my driver's license. I could get the points reduced in half by going to traffic school, and so I did. Eventually, this car wouldn't pass inspection, so I sold it. I got older, and I started going the speed limit, and just not as much fun unless you're in a sports car, so I rarely get tickets anymore. The contradiction to this statement happened when I decided to leave the slow lane on the freeway. There is a place on the freeway where every day there seemed to be a slowdown at a particular part of the road. Now, all of the cars were going around a slight corner, and for some reason, no one was able to keep going the speed limit, so everyone on the freeway had to slow to a crawl. I decided to leave the safe, slow right lane, where I am nearly always found these days. I went to the middle lane, and it was slowing down too. So I moved to the fast lane, and I was still going way too fast because the cars in the fast lane were stopped. The car in front of me was stopped. I didn't think I was going to be able to stop, and I was right. I skidded a bit. I hit the car in front of me going about 5 miles per hour. It's really more of a soft tap, so I doubted there was even going to be a dent. But then I looked in the mirror. The guy behind me in the big truck was not slowing down. He was going about 35 to 40 miles an hour, and he rammed my car hard enough to bounce me into the car in front of me again, and this time I hit that guy in front of me hard enough to knock his hat off. So now I had been involved in a three-car pileup. We were the only three who had an accident. Everyone else was cautious enough not to hit somebody else, so we checked out our damage. We pulled off to the side of the road. The police officer had us pulled to the next exit to clear the freeway. I was supposed to be teaching in about an hour, and here's the problem. I got a ticket for hitting the guy in front of me. The guy behind me got a ticket for hitting me. So writing the tickets took longer than I thought it might, and I had to call one of my students in my class and tell them to go home. Now, the guy in front of me, he had an old junker, just like I did. He checked his car for damage and decided there really wasn't a reason to file a claim. He told me he was just glad he wasn't carrying big pieces of metal in the back of his car like he usually did. Yeah, I was very glad, too. My car also didn't seem to be damaged at all. And I attribute that to the spare tire, which hangs on the back of my Jeep-type car, Geo Tracker. The guy behind me had hit right into the tire. I later saw that the tire and the door moved forward a little bit, and the door wouldn't open anymore, but I usually don't use that door anyway. So the two of us in the front had little or no damage. Who I really felt sorry for was the guy behind me who hit into me going 35. He was driving a fairly new pickup, a year or two old maybe, and the tire on the back of my car had demolished his front end. The hood was bent up, his fender was crushed and dented, and the headlights had actually fallen off onto the ground. There must have been thousands of dollars in damage, and he really had no one to blame but himself. So of the three cars involved, he was driving the nicest and probably had the biggest insurance jump the next month. Of the three cars, he had the most damage. So is there a moral to this story? Well, it may be drive a junker. Stay in the slow lane. Welcome to Abundance. I am your host, Dane Allred. Today we celebrate the abundance all around us by saying thank you for the multitude of blessings and opportunities we enjoy. Join with me in this expression of thanks by contemplating proficiency. Number 736 on my list of 1,001 thanks. You've just heard Three Car Pile Up from A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to Dane Allred. Today on Abundance, we'll visit Character Central again, and today we'll be speaking with John Wayne. We'll also examine some of my other driving proficiency in car crashes from Dane Allred's Rules of Engagement. Today on Literature Out Loud, you'll hear about Raising Poultry by Mark Twain, as well as a selection from Brightspace. We'll wrap things up with Much Too Much from Dane Allred's Partycolored Dreamcoat. We'll be right back.
Today on Abundance, we'll examine proficiency, number 736 from my list of 1,001 thanks. It's a list I've compiled to show my gratitude for all the abundance I see around me. I hope to help you see the abundance, and maybe I'll get a little more proficient at this. Maybe you'll become more proficient too. Remember, we are the abundance we seek.
This is Character Central, home of the formerly famous. This is Leo speaking.
Could I speak to Marion Morrison, please?
Who?
The Duke.
No Duke's here, buddy. You mean John Wayne.
Yes. Could I speak with John Wayne, please?
That's going to cost you.
Could we put this on the Bill Gates card, please?
Oh, is this that above the sky again?
Yes, this is Dane Allred.
No, the guy who's always talking about good things, all the good things he sees in life.
Yes, that's me, Dane Allred.
No, that ain't right.
I do talk about 1,001 things I'm thankful for.
Ah, that's the guy, Mr. 1,001 Thanks.
That's me, Dane Allred.
No, that still ain't right. I'll go get Marion. John! Dookie baby, it's Bill Gates on the phone for you.
This isn't Bill Gates. We just used the card I found.
This is Duke speaking.
John Wayne, it's such a pleasure to speak to you. I've really enjoyed every movie I've ever seen you.
Well, I'll tell you, Pilgrim, there are some things a man just can't run away from.
Yes, you are a classic American icon.
I'm an American actor. I work with my clothes on. I have to. Riding a horse can be pretty tough on your legs and elsewhere.
Yes, that could be painful.
When you come slam-bang up against trouble, it never looks half as bad as if you face up to it.
Well, that's exactly the kind of thing I was hoping you would say today and share with our listeners.
I won't be wronged, I won't be insulted, and I won't be laid a hand on. I don't do these things to other people, and I require the same from them.
Oh, another good piece of advice.
Get off your horse and drink your milk.
I'm sorry?
Life is tough, but it's tougher when you're stupid.
Stupid?
Talk low, talk slow, and don't say too much.
Am I talking too fast?
You can't whine and bellyache because somebody else got a good break and you didn't.
Well, I'm sorry if you think I'm whining.
A man's got to do what a man's got to do.
Mr. Wayne, is there a way you would like to be remembered?
Well, I would like to be remembered. Well, the Mexicans have a phrase, feo fuerte y formal, which means he was ugly, strong, and had dignity.
Ugly? Really?
Well, I've tried to live my life so that my family would love me and my friends would respect me. The others can do whatever the hell they please.
Good advice. Any advice for our future?
Tomorrow is the most important thing in life. Comes into us at midnight very clean. It's perfect when it arrives and it puts itself in our hands. It hopes we've learned something from yesterday.
Very good. I hope we have learned something today. Any advice about women from the manliest man of American film?
Well, I've had 3 wives, 6 children, and 6 grandchildren, and I still don't understand women.
Yes, Abraham Lincoln did say a woman was the only thing he was afraid of that he knew wouldn't hurt him.
Well, courage is being scared to death and saddling up anyway.
Yes, I guess there is no answer for the fear.
All battles are fought by scared men who'd rather be someplace else.
Yes, I can't believe you only received 1 Oscar for Best Actor.
Well, you can't eat awards, nor more to the point, drink them.
Hard living and hard drinking.
I never trust a man that doesn't drink.
Well, John Wayne, thank you for being with us today.
A man ought to do what he thinks is right.
That's right. And again, thank you for speaking with us from Character Central. Dane Allred's Rules of Engagement, Car Crashes. I was in 6 car accidents in the year after I got my driver's license. I got smart after my high school car crashes and read a defensive driving book. I was a better driver and the accident rate went down. I went 6 or 7 years without problems until Debbie and I were driving up Little Cottonwood Canyon. A truck pulled off to the side, the wrong side of the road, which meant it was facing us. The fool in the truck decided to pull out just as we reached him. That meant we had 2 choices, pull into the other lane or pull off the road. The truck was in my lane. Then suddenly there was a car in the other lane. Both lanes are now full, and our only choice is the trees. This meant we had to pull off the near side of the road, going about 35 miles per hour. We bounced along about 5 feet and then crashed hard into a tree. The tree limb hit the windshield, and then Debbie's forehead hit the windshield. The glass from the window cut off part of her bangs, which took forever to grow back. As I looked over to see if Debbie was okay, I could see that she was bleeding. She put her hand up to her head to stop the bleeding. I jumped out of the car and yelled at the idiots in the truck. The car in the other lane had stopped. I think they called EMS, and all I remember is the ambulance taking care of Debbie. I insisted that the guys in the truck stay, but the ambulance guys and the cop let them go while I was checking on Debbie. This was another wreck, and I got to pay for it since the guy responsible was let go. My insurance was already high enough, and the guy responsible for the accident was off the hook. I wasn't going to report it to my insurance since that would only mean higher rates for the next few years. So I was blessed to shell out over $2,000 to get the windshield replaced and weld on a new part of the frame. It was fixed in time for us to move to California, where I would be starting as a brand new teacher and get another part-time life-risking side job painting flagpoles. I wish I could say I've had my last car wreck, but with my past experience under my belt, I know I'll have to be extra careful. I'm getting to be so old now that I drive the speed limit on every road. It has a nice side effect. I no longer have to mash the brakes when I see the police. And there is a nice sense of calm as you pass through the radar without a worry. I only wish that I had driven better earlier in my life. That same car that had the windshield accident was in two more before it was totaled. We were driving up the hill into Orem, and it was snowing lightly, but it was snowing enough that I should have been driving slower. The Volvo in front of me had stopped in the road for some reason, and I didn't see it fast enough. I was able to swerve to get from behind the car, but not far enough to avoid collision. We slid past the passenger side. Both of the blue Volkswagen bumpers were cleanly sheared off, and we suddenly had half of a dune buggy. The impact pushed us sideways up over the sidewalk where we came to rest. Unfortunately, no one was injured. I guess it's really true about Volvos being a tough car, because when we went to inspect the damage to the other car, there was a small hole in the back panel about the size of a dime. That was all the damage I could see. I was impressed. My insurance company was not. The company canceled me, and I had to get insurance with another insurer. I wasn't involved in the final accident of the Volkswagen, but I will describe its infamous ending because it was one of the first times my daughter Tia got to go to the emergency room. Debbie was going to her folks' house, and as she pulled out at a four-way stop only about 8 blocks from her parents' house, some old guy ran the stop sign and T-boned them. Glass shattered all over Tia, and she got to get checked out for cuts at the hospital. I was waiting for them in Ogden to celebrate her first birthday. I guess that is one birthday we will never forget, although I doubt she remembers anything about it. Bright Space by Dane Allred. Proficiency. There is a reason you are here. You came here from the Bright Space wanting to learn all there is to learn. I was there with you. So was everyone, whoever was, is, or will be. We decided to leave and learn on our own, separate and apart, what we could not learn staying in the Bright Space together. You are here to learn what you can, to do what you are here to do that no one else can do. You know what that is, that one thing you can do that no one else can do. I can't do it, only you. I cannot know all things, and neither can you, but as we work our way through our appointed sphere in our chosen place, there are some very important things to learn that only you can learn. The talents, skills, and proficiencies you have brought with you are perfectly designed for what you have to do. I also have my talents and skills, different from you, meant to accomplish what it is I have to do. Finding that which we are to do is never easy, but when you are there, you will know. A feeling of peace and belonging. A feeling of purpose and accomplishment. A knowledge that at this time, in this place, this is what you are here to do. Take a moment to enjoy that feeling, and then you will move from that place of certainty back to the doubt. Back to the next task on that special list that only you are responsible for. Then you will move on to the next thing, and the next, until you reach your final assignment. We will all continue that work we are here to do until we reach our final assignment, and finally rejoin everyone else in the bright space. When all that can ever be has been, we will return and share what we have learned. It's time to do what only you can do. Literature Out Loud, To Raise Poultry, by Mark Twain. A letter written to a poultry society that had conferred a complimentary membership upon the author, written about 1870. Seriously, from an early youth, I have taken an especial interest in the subject of poultry raising, and so this membership touches a ready sympathy in my breast. Even as a schoolboy, poultry raising was a study with me, and I may say without egotism that as early as the age of 17, I was acquainted with all the best and speediest methods of raising chickens, from raising them off the roost by burning lucifer matches under their noses, down to lifting them off a fence on a frosty night by insinuating the end of a warm board under their heels. By the time I was 20 years old, I really suppose I had raised more poultry than any one individual in all the section round about there. The very chickens came to know my talent by and by. The youth of both sexes ceased to paw the earth for worms, and old roosters that came to crow remained to pray when I passed by. I have had so much experience in the raising of fowls that I cannot but think that a few hints from me might be useful to the society. The two methods I have already touched upon are very simple and are only used in the raising of the commonest of class of fowls. One is for summer, the other for winter. In the one case, you start out with a friend along about 11 o'clock on a summer's night. Not later, because in some states, especially California and Oregon, chickens always rouse up just at midnight and crow from 10 to 30 minutes according to the ease or difficulty they experience in getting the public waked up. And your friend carries with him a sack. Arrived at the hen roost, your neighbor's, not your own, you light a match, hold it under first one and then another pullet's nose until they are willing to go into that bag without making any trouble about it. You then return home, either taking the bag with you or leaving it behind according as the circumstances shall dictate. Note by the author. I have seen the time when it was eligible and appropriate to leave the sack behind and walk off with considerable velocity without ever leaving any word where to send it. In the case of the other method mentioned for raising poultry, your friend takes along a covered vessel with a charcoal fire in it, and you carry a long, slender plank. Oh, this is a frosty night, understand. Arrived at the tree or fence, or other hen roost, your own if you are an idiot, You warm the end of your plank with your friend's fire vessel, then raise it aloft and ease it up gently against a slumbering chicken's foot. If the subject of your attentions is a true bird, he will infallibly return thanks with a sleepy cluck or two and step out and take up quarters on the plank, thus becoming so conspicuously accessory before the fact to his own murder as to make it a grave question in our minds, as it once was the mind of a Blackstone, whether he is not really and deliberately committing suicide in the second degree. But you enter into a contemplation of these legal refinements subsequently, not then. When you wish to raise a fine, large, donkey-voiced Shanghai rooster, you do it with a lasso, just as you would a bull. It is because he must be choked, and choked effectively. Two, it is the only good, certain way, for whenever he mentions the matter which he is cordially interested in, the chances are 99 in 100 that he secures somebody else's immediate attention to it, too, whether it's day or night. The Black Spanish is an exceedingly fine bird and a costly one. $35 is the usual figure, and 50 not uncommon price for a specimen. Even its eggs are worth from $1 to $1.50 apiece, and yet are so unwholesome that the city physician seldom or never orders them for the workhouse. Still, I have once or twice procured as high as 12 at a time for nothing in the dark of the moon. The best way to raise the Black Spanish fowl is to go late in the evening and raise coop and all. The reason I recommend this method is that, the birds being so valuable, the owners do not permit them to roost around promiscuously. They put them in a coop as strong as a fireproof safe and keep it in a kitchen at night. The method I speak of is not always as bright and satisfying success, and yet there are so many little articles of virtue about a kitchen that, if you fail on the coop, you can generally bring away something else. I brought away a nice steel trap one night, worth 90 cents. But what is the use in my pouring out my whole intellect on this subject? I have shown the Western New York Poultry Society that they have taken to their bosom a party who is not a spring chicken by any means, but a man who knows all about poultry, that's just as high up in the most efficient methods of raising it as the president of the institution himself. I thank these gentlemen for the honorary membership they have conferred upon me, and shall stand at all times ready and willing to testify my good feeling and my official zeal by deeds as well as by this hastily penned advice and information. Whenever they are ready to go raising poultry, let them call me for any evening after 11 o'clock. Literature Out Loud, If, by Rudyard Kipling. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you. If you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too. If you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thought your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken, and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools. If you can make one heap of all your winnings, and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss, and lose, and start again at your beginnings, and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds, and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much. If you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son. Allred's partly colored dream coat. Much too much. We are consumers. We are trained to consume from the day we see the McDonald's commercials and beg for Happy Meals. We see the endless advertising telling us how much happier we can be if we only buy the faster car, the bigger house, the latest iPod, the Blu-ray, the big screen TV. Our economy is based on people consuming. It is the engine that drives the world, and without consumers, there might not be things to consume. It does make a kind of sense, and no one wants to return to the Middle Ages, but just when do we reach the point where we finally have too much? I trumpet the abundance we live in at every chance I get, and I try to offer my thanks for the wonderful circumstances I find myself in. I celebrate the present-day technology and advances, eager to see what tomorrow brings. But I hope somewhere in the equation, we decide who we are. We aren't our car, our house, our job, our position in life. If we think that is who we are, then we miss out on what is happening right now in our lives by planning ways to keep our possessions and titles. Some may say I've lived a charmed life, and I would agree with them. But you also lead a charmed life, simply existing in a world where cholera has been largely eliminated because we chlorinate our water. You and I live in a world where probably no one we know has tuberculosis, has ever had scarlet fever, the plague, measles, mumps, or the host of other diseases common just 50 years ago. Our highway engineers design safer roads and cars, and though the newscasters would like us to believe otherwise, we live in less crime, poverty, and abuse. Does it mean that these things don't happen?
No, but it's like someone once said, the world isn't getting worse, it's just that the news reporting is so much better. Can wringing our hands and decrying the remaining problems in our world make this world a better place? Or does our focus on the negative emphasize and empower it? I want to be one of the positive forces in the world, working for a better attitude about what we really have today and the abundance which awaits us tomorrow. It is reflected in the things I do each day. I teach high school students that education can make a difference in their futures, encouraging them to get as much education as possible, sacrificing what seems like the opportunity to work at McDonald's today for the chance at better jobs tomorrow. It happens with a high school degree. I also teach college students who often wonder if the sacrifices they make in money today to endure the poverty of a college life will be worth it tomorrow. They know of the promise of more education and endure the challenges of endless classes, lecturing, and stultifying boredom to be able to provide a better future for themselves and their future families. I work each week promoting religious activity in my church callings, urging people to see the benefit of living correct principles today, which gain us happier days now and the promise of a better life after this life. I've been given other talents I try to use to entertain people, helping them make it through one more day, or to help them see the absurdity, the adversity, the abundance, the diversity, and the beauty of this incredible blue planet. The world is overwhelming, and we can either celebrate the good or commiserate about the bad. I'm not asking you to ignore the problems, but use an attitude of the possible to defeat the negativism which surrounds us. Can we be happy in an unhappy world? I contend there is nothing else we can do. When you see the stranger on the street, are they met with a grimace or a grin? Are you pleasant to the cashier about being there to serve you for a wage you probably wouldn't work for? Or do you vent your frustration about prices on the person least able to do anything about it? Are you crowding out others in traffic so you can hurry off to your next appointment? Or are you waving for someone to pull in front of you? It really does all come down to attitude. People choose the kind of day they will have. Even in the midst of the worst of circumstances, we are allowed to choose. We choose each and every second how we will use our lives. And at the end of 31 million seconds, another year has passed. When we get to this moment next year, will it be enough? Welcome to your next 31 million seconds. Spend them well. His First Flight by Liam O'Flaherty. The young seagull was alone in his ledge. His two brothers and his sister had already flown away the day before. He'd been afraid to fly with them. Somehow, when he had taken a little run forward to the brink of the ledge and attempted to flap his wings, he became afraid. The great expanse of sea stretched down beneath, and it was such a long way down, miles down. He felt certain that his wings would never support him, so he bent his head and ran away back to the little hole under the ledge where he slept at night. Even when each of his brothers and his little sister, whose wings were far shorter than his own, ran to the brink, flapped their wings, and flew away, he failed to muster up courage to take that plunge which appeared to him so desperate. His father and mother had come around calling to him shrilly, scolding him, threatening to let him starve on his ledge, unless he flew away. But for the life of him, he could not move. That was 24 hours ago. Since then, nobody had come near him. The day before, all day long, He had watched his parents flying about with his brothers and sister, perfecting them in the art of flight, teaching them how to skim the waves and how to dive for fish. He had, in fact, seen his older brother catch his first herring and devour it, standing on a rock while his parents circled around, raising a proud cackle. And all the morning, the whole family had walked about on the big plateau midway down the opposite cliff, laughing at his cowardice. The sun was now ascending the sky, blazing warmly on his ledge that faced south. He felt the heat because he had not eaten since the previous nightfall. Then he had found a dried piece of mackerel's tail at the far end of his ledge. Now there was not a single scrap of food left. He had searched every inch, rooting among the rough, dirt-caked straw nest where he and his brothers and sister had been hatched. He even gnawed at the dried pieces of eggshell. It was like eating part of himself. He had then trotted back and forth from one end of the ledge to the other, his long gray legs stepping daintily, trying to find some means of reaching his parents without having to fly. But on each side of him, the ledge ended in a sheer fall of precipice with the sea beneath. And between him and his parents, there was a deep, wide crack. Surely he could reach them without flying if he could only move northward along the cliff face. But then on what could he walk? There was no ledge, and he was not a fly. And above him he could see nothing. The precipice was sheer, and the top of it was perhaps farther away than the sea beneath him. He stepped slowly out to the brink of the ledge, and standing on one leg with the other leg hidden under his wing, he closed one eye, then the other, and pretended to be falling asleep. Still, they took no notice of him. He saw his two brothers and his sister lying on the plateau, dozing with their heads sunk into their necks. His father was preening the feathers on his white back. Only his mother was looking at him. She was standing on a high little hump of the plateau, her white breast thrust forward. Now and again she tore at a piece of fish that lay at her feet, and then scraped each side of her beak on the rock. The sight of the food maddened him. How he loved to tear food that way, scraping his beak now and again to wet it. He uttered a low cackle. His mother cackled too and looked over at him. Gah, gah, gah. He cried, begging to her to bring him over some food. Gaula, she screamed back mockingly. But he kept calling plaintively, and after a minute or so, he uttered a joyful scream. His mother had picked up a piece of fish and was flying across to him with it. He leaned out eagerly, tapping the rock with his feet, trying to get nearer to her as she flew across. But when she was just opposite to him, abreast of the ledge, she halted, her legs hanging limp, her wings motionless, the piece of fish in her beak almost within reach of his beak. He waited a moment in surprise, wondering why she did not come nearer, and then, maddened by hunger, he dived at the fish. With a loud scream, he fell outward and downwards into space. His mother had swooped upwards. As he passed beneath her, he heard the swish of her wings. Then a monstrous terror seized him, and his heart stood still. He could hear nothing. But it only lasted a moment. The next moment he felt his wings spread outwards. The wind rushed against his breast feathers and then under his stomach and against his wings. He could feel the tips of his wings cutting through the air. He was not falling headlong now. He was soaring gradually downwards and outwards. He was no longer afraid. He just felt a bit dizzy. Then he flapped his wings once, and he soared upwards. He uttered a joyous scream and flapped them again. He soared higher. He raised his breast and banked against the wind. Ga, 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 ula. His mother swooped past him, her wings making a loud noise. He answered her with another scream. Then his father flew over him screaming. Then he saw his two brothers and sisters flying around him, soaring and diving. Then he completely forgot that he had not always been able to fly, and commenced himself to dive and soar, shrieking shrilly. He was near the sea now, flying straight over it, facing out over the ocean. He saw a vast green sea beneath him with little ridges moving over it. And he turned his beak sideways and crowed amusedly. His parents and his brothers and sisters had landed on this green floor in front of him. They were beckoning to him, calling shrilly. He dropped his legs to stand on the green sea. His legs sank into it. He screamed with fright and attempted to rise again, flapping his wings. He was tired and weak with hunger, and he could not rise, exhausted by the strange exercise. His feet sank into the green sea, and then his belly touched it, and he sank no farther. He was floating on it, and around him his family was screaming, praising him, and their beaks were offering him scraps of dogfish. He had made his first flight. You've been listening to Abundance with your host, Dane Allred. Thanks for being a part of the program and a part of the abundance we all share. Everything you hear on Abundance is available at www.daneallred.com. You can stream this program at daneallred.podbean.com or sign up at Twitter to find out about new episodes as they come online. Or just type my name into a web browser, Daneallred, and I'll be the first site that pops up. Join with me in the abundance I find in this world, and remember, we are the abundance we seek.